It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And welcome to Let's Talk Legal. You can call our local numbers, too, 247-7282 or 353-4674 if you have questions to ask of Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins, who are in the studio. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today, Cecil?
Well, first of all, happy holiday to you and all our listeners.
Coming up on our Independence Day holiday.
Here we are. Good. Wonderful annual holiday, mm-hmm. July 4th. Let's hope it looks a little bit more like July 4th by the time we get there.
We think so.
Okay.
You know, over the past several weeks, Ben, we've talked about guardianship.
Mm-hmm.
And today we're going to kind of segue into fiduciary fiduciary litigation.
Mm.
And, you know, that's a big word, fiduciary. And a lot of times when we're talking about fiduciaries and we're talking about litigation involving fiduciaries, sometimes we're talking about guardians, sometimes we're talking about an attorney in fact, maybe a trustee, maybe an executor, could be just a family relationship where there's a fiduciary.
But it basically means we're following the money, right?
Following the money and we're following the person with the duty,
mm-hmm.
who's had that fiduciary hat placed on their head in mm-hmm. some way. And therefore, there's a higher duty and a higher calling with regard to your obligation to others.
Yes.
So a lot of times at Harvell and Collins, I'm the guy who does the litigation, end mm-hmm. up in court, you know, chasing down these problems, chasing down the money, chasing down the misuse of money.
And bringing someone to be accountable for it, right?
That's exactly right.
Right.
Ben, you know, the word fiduciary, it is a big word. It's kind of a Roman numeral one
mm-hmm.
kind of word because it applies in many different contexts. And basically it is where one holds control and dominion over the property or affairs of another. And of course that can arise in many different contexts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people think about being an executor. People think about being a trustee. Those are all true. It also arises, of course, as we've mentioned, under being the agent under a power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
But this can also arise in what we lawyers call a constructive manner, which means that there really is no document at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that someone is acting on behalf of another. That is sometimes known as a constructive trust. Or a fiduciary relationship that arises by operation of law in some way. Again, if you are handling property that is not exclusively yours
mm-hmm.
for the benefit of another, then you are a fiduciary. And the law, you know, Ben, we can do what we choose to do with our own property.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
If we've got an old car out there and we want to sell it for $500, then hey, we can do it.
Right.
If we've got a piece of property we just want to get rid of, I had a lady in the office just last week that I really kind of questioned a lot about, why are you just giving this property away, this mm-hmm. land away? She really wants to just deed it away, and not even to her child, to a mm-hmm. friend. And she said, you know, Cecil, I just don't want this property anymore. I don't want the taxes. It's not that valuable.
Mm-hmm.
This person can use it. I never use it. I didn't pay for it. She gave me all of the valid reasons for why she's doing what she's doing.
Right. Right.
But the point is we can do what we choose to do with our own property.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's the property of another, we are not allowed to be so arbitrary and our choices are more narrowly focused
mm-hmm.
because there arises a standard, and we must be prudent, the reasonable or prudent man standard. And we must do what other people would do under like circumstances. And
right.
that means get an appraisal
mm-hmm.
of that beat up car or that car that's 5 years old or that property. I mean, if you are a fiduciary, if that lady had been a fiduciary who wanted to give away that property,
mm-hmm.
I would have had a real hard time finding a cubbyhole for her, being able to hang my hat on something that I could justify.
Right.
Because that's the property of another. We would have to look at the tax value.
Mm-hmm.
We would have to look at the value in some way. We probably couldn't just give it away.
Mm-hmm.
So there is definitely an elevated standard. There is an elevated need for accurate record keeping, for documentation. And it's very important when you are acting with property that is not just exclusively your own,
mm-hmm.
to follow these reasonable and prudent man standards.
Well, now, probably the first thing that comes to mind for a lot of listeners is somebody acting improperly as a power of attorney, you know, mm-hmm. And I imagine that it consumes a bulk of that kind of legislation. Obviously, though, you've outlined that it's not just that.
That's right. Power of attorney would probably be at the top of the list. You know, family relationship would be at the top of the list. And mm-hmm. our case law certainly indicates that just serving in a position of trust as a family member would, in most cases, establish a fiduciary relationship. You know, kind of going back to what we've talked about over the past several weeks, guardianship. You know, the North Carolina General Assembly and our statutes with regard to guardianship contemplate this position of a fiduciary relationship under the guardianship statutes, thereby requiring a bond to be posted. And mm-hmm. we talked about that bond, I think, 2 weeks ago, and the reason that bond is required with regard to the personal property is because in the event that personal property wrongfully disappears, then we need a quick remedy for those who have been damaged. Therefore, that bond is that usually an insurance product that allows us to collect against that bond so as to restore the estate of the ward in the event of a breach of fiduciary duty through guardianship. But we don't have that set of circumstances when we're dealing with a power of attorney. You know, 99 times out of 100, there's no requirement in a power of attorney to post a bond. Almost
right.
100 times out of 100. I mean,
right.
I can think of maybe just a very few documents that I've seen in my years of practice indicating that a bond was required. Also, when we're talking about executors as fiduciary duty, well, in just about every will, properly drafted will that you see, there's a waiver of the bond
mm-hmm.
because normally you're naming a family member and someone you trust, and you don't want to frustrate the administration of the estate with requiring them to go out, you know, and get that bond. Now, interestingly, you know, we're talking about the guardianship, and really the bond is only attached to what the personal property,
right.
like the cash, the money, the personal assets, but not the real property. And really the reason for that is because once a guardianship is put in place, and we're talking about conveying real property or making gifts, dealing with real property, any conveyance of real property without approval of the superior court through a guardianship, when we're talking about a gift type situation,
right.
uh-huh. is going to require the order of the court to allow that first.
Yeah, to put it in Cecil's scenario that he mm-hmm. offered before, in other words, that this woman had wanted to give that away, but she was acting as a fiduciary under a guardianship arrangement, she would have had to have a court order.
Right. There is a hoop you have to jump through in order to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And in the event, for example, for real property, there's an attempted conveyance that's not allowed by statute, it's void.
Mm-hmm.
It's void. So you don't need a bond. You just get the property back.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, when we're talking about a guardianship, there are additional safeguards that are put in place, of course, for the personal property, the bond, and then for the real property, the requirement to deal with the court system, to
mm-hmm.
petition for whatever transfers you're wanting to do before you can go forth and complete those transfers in a way that's going to be, you know, seen as valid.
Okay. Again, if you have questions, you can call us 800-818-2255, 247-7282-353-4674. Maybe you've had a situation where someone has acted without that kind of a level of accountability, and you want to find out if there's a litigation that would be possible there. Talking about fiduciary litigation here today. I would imagine that you put families and other things up at the top of the list, but we hear stories of embezzlement, stories where people have they've been entrusted in a company.
Absolutely.
And they may not have there may not be a written agreement that they were an officer in the company handling credit cards, for example.
Correct. That's not so distinct from that constructive trust that
mm-hmm.
I spoke about earlier. If you were in a position where it is clear that you are handling the assets of another, even though there's no written document, mm-hmm. even though there's no appointment as yourself as executor or trustee or power of attorney, but you have access to the funds of another, then the law implies that you will utilize those funds for the benefit of the principal,
mm-hmm.
even though there's no appointment or document or proceeding in a court or anything of that nature. Now, of course, also an employee, of course, there is the implied duty of good faith in terms of, you know, acting, you know, and then embezzlement
right.
is also a crime.
Right. So you have both criminal and civil.
You do in that context.
Yeah.
And, that is in fact exactly how those cases end up framing up that we unfortunately see from time to time where an employee embezzles.
We'll have more in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Always a reminder, you can go to their website at harvellandcollins.com and listen to past shows. You can also email those questions as well. You can find all that information on the website at harvellandcollins.com, and you can reach us here right now at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674. Hey, welcome back to the program. Good to have you with us here with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. Let's Talk Legal every Tuesday morning, a chance for you to ask questions about your legal life as well. And today, mm-hmm. talking about fiduciary litigation, keeping people yeah. responsible for handling money right.
I mean, Ben, I can tell you, we represent a lot of executors. We represent a lot of folks who come in and ask questions about serving under a power of attorney. And this many times is a bit of a minefield.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, what is reasonable? You know, what
right.
is prudent? I mean, sometimes it's so obvious what it is. But there are other times
mm-hmm.
that you are, you know, it's not as clear. It's very gray. And some examples of that, for instance, are, you know, the sale of real property after it's been sitting
mm-hmm.
for a long, long time. And even though the appraisal is much higher, or the tax value is higher, you know, you just can't get that value for
mm-hmm.
it. And the trustee is out there asking you and pushing you in terms of, you know, can't we sell it for less? And you know, we've got to document that. We maybe
right.
need a letter from a realtor saying that all these efforts have been made and that there are repairs that are needed to the home that are keeping it from getting exactly the appraised value. Maybe talk with the appraiser again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got folks out there who are going to question that. Another example is when we are holding large portfolios of stock.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very nervous position to be in at the initiation of a file
mm-hmm.
for an executor, a trustee, or power of attorney. You know, what if you're holding a large portfolio and then we have one of these huge declines in the stock market and we lose, you know, a third of the portfolio or something. I mean, this has happened.
Right.
This happened to people
right.
personally. They can relate to what I'm saying. You know, many times if assets are going to be distributed pursuant to a will or trust, then within a pretty reasonable amount of time
mm-hmm.
after you're appointed, you know, let's get those assets sold, particularly
mm-hmm.
here in the most recent time period that we've been in where the stock market has been at historical highs.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And all of us are a little bit nervous about what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to have another one of these, you know, corrections? Well, you know, if you've got some folks out there, you can talk to them and see if they want to take the portfolio in kind.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have now assumed that risk while we take the time to get the portfolio out, you know, stock by stock or
right.
in kind. But otherwise, probably the prudent standard would be to just liquidate the portfolio at an all-time high and distribute those assets, you know, in cash, and then those folks can make their own choices as to their investments. Let's keep in mind that they also will allege that there was a step up in basis and tax basis on those stock funds.
Right, right.
And so you are in a win-win situation when you have a stock portfolio that is at high value, that is at an all-time historic record in the stock market, and of course now there's been a death, you have a no capital gain because you have a step up in tax basis. You can only imagine how they feel if for some reason all of a sudden you're holding the stock for 6 months, and during that 6 months is when the market chooses to correct and you lose $200,000 or $300,000.
Right, exactly.
So these are some very practical things that have to be considered early on in a file.
I would imagine that, you know, again, when you're talking about executors and sometimes in litigation that may follow, you have obviously people who believe that the executor is not acting prudently, is not doing the things that they ought to be doing. But sometimes the executor is the, quote, favored son, is the one who's named and is going to be receiving a chunk of this estate. But it doesn't seem fair to the others, but that was the intent of the person whose estate it was.
That's right. I mean, you know, in the event that the trustee of a trust, you know, and the beneficiary are the same, well, obviously, who has standing to sue the trustee then? Is the guy going to sue himself? Probably not.
No.
If he's the majority beneficiary and he's done something that may affect the value of the assets held in the trust or in the estate, maybe because he didn't liquidate, he didn't see the stock market falling out. Well, I mean, that probably is not a breach of fiduciary duty as long as he's acting prudently. You know, now if he takes the funds through the administration of the estate and, you know, sinks them in, you know, coal mines in West Virginia and something crazy, you know, then that might be, you know, a breach of that prudent investor rule. So yeah, you do have to look at the context. It's not just the behavior, but it's who it affects as well and who's damaged, as a result. You know, some of the other things, you know, that we look at with regard to this is the trustee, Ben, in many situations has discretion, sole discretion, for example, in a trust document to make decisions with regard to how the assets are to be used, how they are to be distributed, when they're to be distributed. That's a tough standard to overcome if we're challenging that sole discretion standard. However, in many situations, we deal with trusts that have more of an ascertainable standard, a specific standard with regard to use of funds or distribution of funds. For example, we deal with language with regard to ages sometimes. Assets have to be delivered to the children or grandchildren at age 25, 30, 35, or age 25 and 30, depending on the language. Well, there's not a whole lot of interpretation there. So in the event there's a failure to do that and then damage to the asset and therefore damage to the benefit of the beneficiary, then, hey, we look back at the language of the document because the document identifies your duty as a fiduciary. We deal with cases sometimes where the trust may have language in it, and one comes to mind right now where the trustee was under an obligation to disperse the assets of the trust as soon as practicable after a death. Now, that's a little more subjective as far as interpreting what that means. But in one particular case I'm dealing with, there was a failure to disperse those assets over an 18-month period of time. One of the beneficiaries died after 18 months, totally changing the distribution pursuant to the terms of the trust. Our position on that particular case is 18 months is not as soon as practicable. There's no reason that you did not disperse these assets sooner. So a lot of times, you know, Ben, we are not only looking at the behavior and you know, who it affects, but we're looking at the duty as defined and identified in the governing document, which in many cases when we're doing that It's the trust, a trust that is the governing document.
Yeah, we're seeing, unfortunately, on a national scale, some of these that are being played out. The Newtown killings that took place up there and the charity funds that were raised after that, they're arguing right now over how they're going to be distributed and how quickly. And in Boston, they took it and they took that one by bull by the horns, and they're already closed out.
Right.
The One Boston Fund. So,
right.
Again, there's two examples of fiduciary responsibility being taken in different ways. This is Coastal Daybreak, and Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. And we have Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us as we're talking about fiduciary litigation here, too, as we wrap it up for a few minutes.
Ben, some other examples that come to mind is that we have a executor who is enjoying being executor. And we'll leave it at a he or a she, but yeah. I just don't want to dare approach an but this estate
right.
has just lingered on and on and on
right.
and on. And of course, there's real property involved. And of course, there would be, you know, in our opinion, there would be a way in which if there had been a little bit more aggression, we could have probably gotten that real property sold and gotten this estate closed. But for whatever reason, there always seems to be a reason why this property just won't quite sell, even though the price keeps on this property keeps going up and up and up and up and up. You know, it's difficult to have an executor removed. It's a high burden for a lawyer to carry. There's just a lot of gray zone in this area of the
right.
law, unless you are just able to prove, you know, just a complete breach of good faith.
You know, here's one of those areas, Cecil, where you've mentioned this so many times before. If folks make their wishes known to their families, for example, or to the people who would be the beneficiaries long before it has to be executed in terms of having an executor informing the estate, it probably sets the groundwork for a lot of this moving a little bit more smoothly. But even so, somebody can, those positions are positions of power and people just kind of get sucked into it.
The career executor. You do run into this every now and then. It's rare, but they are out there. We have another file right now that concerns or have had a file that concerns an executor trustee who felt that it was best that the structure on the lot, the house, there's a house and a lot, obviously, as there always is. The house is always on a lot. But he wanted the house to be demolished.
All right. And you get arguments there. If you want to find out more, harvellandcollins.com. Call 252-726-9050.